Hi, friends. My name is Jess Piper, and this is a Dirt Road Democrat. On this episode, I'll be talking about Sweatergate and what it's like to be a woman living under a GOP supermajority. This show is brought to you by the Heartland Pod and our Patreon supporters. To learn more and join us, go to heartlandpod.com and click the Patreon link to get signed up to support this show and others in the Heartland Pod family to get bonus content and special access for events. Follow me on social media. On Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, I'm Piper from Missouri. On TikTok, you can find me at Jess Piper Mo. And be sure to follow the Heartland Pod on all accounts. Okay, let's play a little trivia, friends. So what state am I in? This state was the first to ban abortion after Roe fell. This state is 50th in starting teacher pay. And this state just had scandal. I'm talking scandal. Down at their state capitol for the fact that there was much discussion about how women legislators should cover their arms on the House floor. What state am I in? Oh, you know, I'm in Missouri. So, okay, these three random things happened in Missouri. What does that have to do with anything and how are they connected? Well, over 70% of the folks who teach in Missouri are women. Obviously, you understand how the Roe decision impacts women. And lastly, now we are telling women legislators how to cover their arms on the House floor. I mean, it all has to do with women. And the reason I'm talking about it today is because I live in Missouri where we have had a GOP supermajority for 20 years, two decades. What's it like to live here? Let's have a chat. You know, what is it like to live in Missouri as a woman under a supermajority, a GOP supermajority that we've had for 20 years? There was something that made national headlines last week, and it was called Sweatergate. and that is where women were reminded, women lawmakers in Missouri were reminded to cover their arms on the floor and just how they should cover their arms on the floor. And I'm going to let you listen to a minute of that.
What's interesting is the rule has always required us to wear a second layer of clothing, either, and that's been interpreted as either a blazer or a jacket or a cardigan. And this year, the Republicans were trying to further narrow that scope to really only include blazers, which our caucus believed was both size and cost prohibitive and also ridiculous.
Okay, so what? You know, the thing I want to reiterate is that this has always been a mandate for women lawmakers to cover their arms on the floor. And in fact, it extends to men as well. There was a big to-do last year with one of our senators in Missouri. His name is Mike Moon, and he was really upset about the dress code. And he showed up on the floor in overalls with a shirt and a tie and a blazer over that. And he was actually, kicked off of his committees for a little bit for disobeying the rules and showing up in overalls. So we kind of have a thing here in Missouri where we do that. But let's get back to Sweatergate. And this was happening because I think there was a discussion about whether women could wear cardigans on the floor. And trust me, as a teacher, former teacher, like cardigans are life, right? So I'm not sure why they struggled with cardigans, but in the end, they did end up saying that women lawmakers in Missouri could cover their arms with cardigans, blazers, even knit blazers, right? Wow, we are doing things in Missouri. The point of this is that it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how women are dressed on the floor in Jeff City when our schools are defunded, when we have abortion bans, when our roads are crumbling, when we don't have access to healthcare, when our hospitals are closing. So you can understand and feel the palpable rage against this system that spends time making sure that women lawmakers are covering their arms correctly. And this really goes to the heart of kind of what we fight here all the time in Missouri, and that's actually purity culture. So let's talk about it. I'm going to tell you that it's very difficult for any progressive to live in a red state, you know, one who has a super majority. But in my opinion, and in my experience, it's been very difficult to be a woman, a progressive woman, living in a red state, because there are constantly bills and mandates and laws being put forth about my own body, about my daughter's bodies. And I could talk about this at length. I could tell you all of the people who hold degrees in theology that are writing bills about medicine on the House floor. But I want to give you a good example of what it feels like, the condescension you feel, the constant someone talking over you or treating you as a second-class citizen. So I'm going to let you listen to a couple of clips that were put together from a radio show that I was on a couple weeks ago. Chris DeGaulle has a radio show out of Kansas City. He's very conservative. He asked me to go on his show, and I thought, you know what? I've done other conservative shows. I mean, I can do this because I can hold my own, because I know what I'm talking about. But this sort of sets the stage for what it's like to be a woman in this sort of environment. You're not even allowed to get your point across before you're cut off and you're treated with utter condescension. But anyway, I'll let you listen.
They have been absolutely, you know, torn apart with the defunding of education in Missouri.
But what is the, help me understand that. Hang on just a second. I just want to know, like you say there are 17 kids in your class. So,
right.
Why is that a net negative though?
It's not. I purposely moved here. I'm saying her school has been defunded. There's just a small amount of kids. And so
what does that mean? That's the next question I have, is what does defunded mean? Are there people in your community who'd be interested in it?
Do you know what would be a better choice? Just to send that money to my school. Why don't we just fund the schools?
Better for
who? The crazy thing, I think. Yeah, wait just a second. Better for my kid. A brave
no,
five.
No, look, Jessica, here's the thing. I really do appreciate your willingness to be here, but there's no need for the condescension. I'm just trying to, I'm having a polite conversation.
And you're interrupting a lot as well, but I'm just going to
tell
you.
No, see, here's the thing. I've actually been very polite and given you tons of time.
Just
so gross, right? It was frustrating to say the least. I never really was able to get my point across because he kept cutting me off and saying that I was playing the victim. And I'll tell you, folks, I have never played the victim in my life, whether I was the victim or not, because that's just not my thing. You know, I stand up and I speak truth to power and I say what I mean. But it's hard, right? You could hear how hard it was for me to get anything across. Because it's the constant talking over. And that to me is super representative of what it feels like to live in this state, to go about my business daily knowing that someone can pass a law and make my life a living hell at any point. And in fact, they often do. So let's go. Let's talk about the abortion ban and what has happened in Missouri. So at the beginning of the show, I introduced three things, you know, women being forced to cover their arms on the House floor, abortion bans, and teacher pay. Like, what do those three things have to do with each other? So let's talk about the teacher pay and why I included that. In Missouri, over 70% of the people who are teachers are women. You know, it's thought of a lot of times as a feminine profession. And obviously, you know, there are a lot of men who teach. I taught with a lot of men. But in general, it is women who go into that profession. So when we start thinking about teacher pay, I think that has a lot to do with the fact that it is mostly thought of as a female profession. And when we go back and we look at the folks who were teaching, you know, or going into teaching 20 or 30 years ago, especially in my area, it was a lot of farmers' wives. It was women who were teaching for, you know, a small second income so they could afford, you know, the, you know, nicer things, extra things. But they weren't the main breadwinners. And this thought has persisted over the decades. And there are a lot of reasons that teachers are paid really poorly. I mean, obviously, a lot of it is to get teachers out of the profession. We can reduce the amount of teachers and we can install people like in Florida. You know, if you're a veteran, it doesn't matter if you have a college degree or not. Come on, you can teach. So that's part of it. But always in the back of my mind is the fact that these were women who weren't asking for a lot of money and who were just using it, you know, as second income. So in Missouri, we're 50th in starting teacher pay. We're dead last. And what happens is you'll see a lot of rural districts like where I am, where, you know, folks are starting off at $32,000-$33,000 a year, which is unacceptable, which is, you know, people aren't able to pay their rent and pay their bills. Missouri has a great teacher retirement, but in that vein as well, they take a huge amount of your checkout and save that for your retirement. So like me, I was making 41 something a year my last year of teaching, and that was with 16 years of experience and also a master's degree. But what I was actually bringing home was about $2,400-$2,500 a month. That's what I lived on a month. So we're talking about being a woman in Missouri under a GOP supermajority. This is just one of the parts of it. I mean, you know, teachers are 50th in pay, but look at social workers who, again, the majority of social workers are women. Look at the starting pay for state agencies for social workers. It all makes sense.
Support this show and all of the work in the Heartland Pod universe by going to heartlandpod.com and clicking the Patreon link to sign up. Membership starts at $1 per month and goes up from there with extra shows and special access at the higher levels. Heartlandpod.com, click the Patreon link, or just go to Patreon and search for the Heartland Pod. No matter the level you choose, your membership helps us create these independent shows as we work together to change the conversation. And now, back to the show.
I was a teenager in the 90s, and if you've listened to the show or you follow me for a while, you know that I was born and raised in the Southern Baptist Church as an evangelical, and man, the 90s were something with purity culture. And if you don't know what that is, well, one, you're lucky, and two, it kind of just shapes your life. You know, it gets in your brain and it manifests in weird ways. But in the 90s, we were, especially as girls, taught that, you know, our bodies caused men to sin and have impure thoughts. And some of the girls I knew got these purity rings where they were pledging their bodies basically to their dad until they got married. You know, it's that weird moment where, you know, the marriage ceremony is strange, right? Like, your dad gives you away. He gives your virginity and your body away to this man who's waiting at the end of the aisle. And when you think about it like that, you're like, yeah, that's weird. But like, that was literal. You know, I grew up in Arkansas, and like I said, I knew girls that got those purity rings, and we would have people that would come to school and, you know, talk about purity pledges. We didn't get sex education. We were given, you know, abstinence only. And by the way, you know, if it was always our fault as a girl for whatever happened to our bodies, like that was always our fault. And like I said, it gets in your brain and you're not sure what to do with that. And I'll tell you a story. I started babysitting when I was like 12. So I had a job, I swear, all my life. But when I was 16, I got a job at Piggly Wiggly. And I was really excited to have that job. And I showed up every day and I worked really hard and I did what I was supposed to. And I got moved up. And by the time I was 17, I was working in this thing called the cash office, which I don't know if you remember grocery stores back in the day, but you would walk in and there would be like this elevated spot right when you walked in, right? Like literally higher. And there would be people back behind there and you could cash your check. You could get a money order because it was back in the day. There's all kinds of, you could pay your water bill. There's all kinds of business you could do. And that was called the cash office at Piggly Wiggly. And that's where I was moved up to, and I was super proud of myself. And everything went well until we got a new male manager. And that's where things kind of went off the rails for me. It started with, and this is when you think about, this is actual grooming, when we want to talk about grooming. He would say stuff about my makeup. So I would show up to work and he'd say, you know, you have too much blush on and go wipe your lipstick off, which I thought was weird, but I mean, I'm 16, 17 years old. So I did what I was told. And when I moved into the cash office is when things really started getting strange. He would use that opportunity to, you know, touch my shoulder, or stand behind me, when I was working on an order. And then he would start to do the thing. And I know you women know what I'm talking about. You know, you go to a bar and it's really crowded and, some man will try to pass by you. And for some reason he has to put his hand on you when he walks past you. Like, what is the deal with that? They don't do it to each other. I'm not sure why they do it to us, but you know, they'll put their hand on the small of your back or on your hip or something. But anyway, so that's what he started doing. He would walk behind me and, you know, put his hand on me when he walked past me. Well, then it escalated from there because I didn't say anything because, I mean, if somebody is putting their hands on me, it's obviously my fault. It's something that I'm doing to make him think that's okay. So he would start putting both of his hands on my hips when he would walk past. And then it went from that to putting his hands on his hips and pulling my body back into his. And it really culminated in an incident that happened one night when it was just he and I that were closing, and he pulled me to him, and, you know, I felt something and I was like, all right, I'm done. So I quit the next day because that's what we did. Because, you know, as someone who grew up in purity culture, I knew that this was likely something that I had done to make him act like this. Also, he was married and I didn't want to get him in trouble. So the best thing for me to do was just quit my job. And long story short, that's what purity culture looks like. So what does purity culture have to do with abortion bans? Well, a lot, because it's always a woman's fault if she gets pregnant, right? She shouldn't have had sex for pleasure because that's not okay, right? Because sex is for creating new lives. And that's honestly what they think. If you are brave enough to go online and talk about the fact that women should have, you know, bodily autonomy, that they should have the right to their own bodies, you're going to hear people say, well, keep your legs closed then, right? If you don't want to get pregnant, then don't have sex. I don't hear these things, you know, being thrown out towards men, but it is towards women, and that is purity culture in action. My representative, when asked about abortion, said that he believes life begins at conception. Conception. There was a man who is actually now a representative in Missouri on his website who said that life begins at inception. Thinking about being pregnant is enough to lose your bodily autonomy. We live in a state that was the first state to ban abortion. Eric Schmidt, who is now our junior senator, which makes me sick to say after all of the things that he's done to our schools and to our state, he was the first one. He was our AG, and as soon as Roe fell, he couldn't put on his tracks shoes fast enough to get somewhere to get, you know, a news crew in front of him to sign away the rights, the bodily autonomy of every single woman and girl in this state. They couldn't do it quick enough. But I'll tell you this, in my area, abortion has been banned for decades. There is no access in Northwest Missouri. There is one clinic in this entire state that still performs abortions, and it is over 5 hours from me. 5 hours. But you know what we have all over this state? All over the state, in my tiny little community, you know what we have? A pregnancy crisis center. a place that works in conjunction with the church to talk women out of having an abortion, where they talk them into, you know, giving up their babies for adoption. And by the way, are there people, you know, waiting in the wings to adopt these pristine infants that are, you know, are being given birth to all the time? Yeah, you know, there are. And to me, I don't know. When we talk about human trafficking, all I can ever think is the fact that women have no right over their own bodies and we're told to give away infants that are forcibly produced, which to me feels every bit like human trafficking. But in my part of the state, we haven't had access for a very long time. Like I said, for decades. I think in 2018 is when Kansas City lost its rights. There was a Planned Parenthood there, and they lost their rights to perform abortions. And quite honestly, in St. Louis, because they've passed so many restrictions on abortions, like, you know, there's a mandatory wait. You have to have, you know, a vaginal ultrasound, you know, all of these things that honestly, if you go to St. Louis, they're like, just cross the river, just head into Illinois, where it's safe and where it's legal and where you can get this done in a timely manner. So women, under this purity culture, living under a GOP supermajority, we've lost the right, to control our own bodies. And it wasn't just men that celebrated the abortion ban. You have to remember that Phyllis Schlafly is from St. Louis, you know, the woman who was against ERA, who was against women's rights, who was against feminism with all of her being. She's also from Missouri. So Rush Limbaugh, you know, we're known for these folks who are against, you know, any sort of women's rights in this state, and that legacy continues. So let me tell you the story of a woman that I know from a couple years ago who was pregnant and did not want to be pregnant and was very early on in her pregnancy and tried to get an abortion in Missouri. She ended up seeing an advertisement for a pregnancy crisis center. So she called them and they asked her when her last period was. And then they told her that they would set her up for an ultrasound within a few weeks. Now you have to remember in Missouri, we have an 8-week ban, you know, with no exceptions. Once you hit the 8-week mark, you cannot get an abortion in this state. They pushed her ultrasound date out a little past her 8-week mark. Now, I think that's suspicious. So I started asking around and talking to folks, and they're like, yeah, that's kind of what they do. They talk to women, and they don't inform them that, you know, they're trying to talk them out of an abortion. They set them up for an ultrasound, and they always make it a little late, you know, where you're not going to be able to get an abortion after that. So who funds these crisis centers? Actually, if you're in Missouri, you do. They get tax money to run these fake pregnancy centers. Women and girls are often duped into thinking that they're going to be able to access an abortion when they talk to these folks. And the only reason that the woman that I know was able to get an abortion is she thought it was strange. At the end of the conversation, the woman who answered the phone asked to pray with her and to pray over the health of her zygote at that time. And that kind of clicked something in this woman's brain, and she thought, this doesn't sound right. And so she reached out to another friend who told her, oh gosh, no, if you want an abortion, you're going to have to call another place. Those pregnancy crisis centers are meant to keep women pregnant and to confuse them and to hoodwink them into continuing a pregnancy. So it's very difficult to access an abortion in our state. It's very easy to be hoodwinked into continuing a pregnancy. But beyond that, people, lawmakers in Missouri, we have pastors, people with, you know, degrees in theology that are writing bills regarding women's bodies on the House floor. So last year we had a lawmaker, his name is Brian Seitz, and he is from Branson. He wrote a bill basically criminalizing the care and the treatment that women need who are suffering from an ectopic pregnancy. You know, an ectopic pregnancy, if left untreated, can kill you. You can have your fallopian tubes rupture and bleed out. And Brian Seitz is so obsessed with women's bodies that he thinks that any sort of care that removes a fertilized egg is an abortion, which, you know, technically it is, that he went after the treatment of ectopic pregnancies. And he was just absolutely torn apart on the floor by Democratic lawmakers when they were asking about this bill. And he ended up pulling the bill. But this is what we see happening. You see it across the United States where lawmakers will criminalize, you know, abortion, treatment of ectopic pregnancies, even miscarriage. And I know this. This is, you know, about a fourth of all pregnancies end in a spontaneous abortion or a miscarriage. And I've had two. And I know so many women that have also had experiences with miscarriages. And both of the pregnancies that I miscarried were wanted pregnancies. I planned to go through them. But my second miscarriage, I was about 9.5, 10 weeks along, and I went for a walk. It was a hot day. It was in Arkansas. And I went for a walk, and I came back and started cramping. So I sat down and, you know, tried to get myself together, and I was already miscarrying at that point and ended up having a complete miscarriage by that afternoon. And it was actually, you know, in the bathroom, on the toilet. And I called my doctor and I told him what had happened. And he asked me what I had done that day, and he thought maybe it was strenuous exercise. And then he asked me to do something. He asked me to scoop out the remnants of the miscarriage and bring them in for analysis. And I was like, no, no, I'm not going to do that. I don't want to do that. And so I flushed the toilet. And I think about that often because under some state laws, and maybe in, you know, what we see coming down in Missouri, I could be charged with a crime. I could be charged because I did strenuous exercise while I was pregnant. I could be charged because I didn't call anyone until after the miscarriage was complete. I could be charged because I didn't bring in the remnants, you know, the cells, the tissue from the toilet into my doctor. And when we start using purity culture, when we start using misogyny, when we don't give a shit about women and their bodies, and we start criminalizing things that happen to us, we see, you know, how awful this can be, how women can be prosecuted, how women can go to jail for something that happens to at least a fourth of us and maybe a third of us. And those are the laws, and those are the types of systems that we're living under in red states. Living in a red state, living under a GOP supermajority, can be absolute hell, especially for women. The condescension, the talking over, the creating bills that harm us, writing laws that could actually kill us. And also just the things like covering our arms, you know, that purity culture crap, that, you know, not paying women professionals like we should be because we're women. All of this is a culmination of a culture we live under in Missouri. And it's not just Missouri. If you live in a red state, you probably feel this too. It's something that we have to fight back against as women, but also as allies. You know, I talked a lot about, you know, the men in this state, but I'm married to an ally. My sons are allies. They stand up and they, you know, talk back. And that's what women in this state have to do too. Every time I talk about the failures of my government, I'll have somebody say, you know, why don't you just move to California? Why don't you go to New York if you don't like it? That's not what I can do and what I want to do. My kids and grandkids are here. You're not going to push me out of this state. You're not going to take away the rights of my daughters and think that I'm going to sit back and do nothing about it, right? And it's going to take all of us. And so my call to action for any of you is to make yourself familiar with what's going on, be it the small stuff, you know, a woman needing to wear a cardigan on the House floor to speak, to the big stuff, taking away bodily autonomy of women, right? We all have to stand up and do something about it. If you're state representative, if you're state senator, if you're, you know, your U.S. senator, if they are folks that are obviously using, you know, religion to write laws against women, if they are just, you know, plain old chauvinist, be sure to check them. Be sure to say something. Be sure to write, to call, to post on social media, to make sure that we all know what's going on around us and we're saying we're not going to take it anymore, right? Thank you for joining me, friends. I'm so excited. This was our third episode. And if you're wondering or thinking about school vouchers and school choice, I want to invite you back next week where I'll have an expert from Michigan, the DeVos state, who will be here to talk about his research into, you know, what's going on with vouchers. And I promise you'll be interested. Have a great week, friends. Can't wait to talk to you soon.
Dirt Road Democrat is brought to you by the Heartland Pod, a Mid-Map Media production. Producers are Adam Summer, Rachel Parker, and Sean Dillon. Theme music by Adam Summer. Host, Jessica Piper. Learn more at heartlandpod.com.